Welcome to This Is Money podcast. I'm Georgie Frost, and joining me and Deputy Editor Lee Boyce is Personal Finance Editor Helen Crane. And what an hour we had this week for our finances. First, at 11, it was announced that, to no one's great surprise, but to everyone's horror, the energy price gap was to go up 54% to just under £2,000 come April. Hot on the heels of that bombshell, we got another rate rise from the Bank of England, piling pressure on borrowers. The government did announce some help, but does it go far enough? Also today, with rates on the rise, would you fix for a decade? Halifax and Lloyds launch Best Buy 10-year deals. Plus, Crane is on the case, solving your problems. And today, it's remortgaging, renovating and overpayments. Don't forget to stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. But first, I am going to go in the order that we got the news on Thursday, Helen and Lee, because if you are an average household on a default energy tariff and with an SVR mortgage, it was a pretty awful hour that started around 11 o'clock that effectively made you about a grand worse off, give or take, come April. First up, the regulator Ofgem announced a 54% hike in energy bills from £1,277 to £1,971, more for those on prepayment meters. That is almost £700 you are going to have to find down the back of your sofa. Helen, I should also point out, because this figure is somewhat misleading, I think, because it is average usage. So the cap is on the energy units, not on your bills. So if you're a big family in a drafty old home, you can expect to pay a lot more. But this is huge. This is going to really put some people over the edge.
Yeah, absolutely. It's £700 a year or more is a huge amount. And you have to think that it's not, you know, this isn't the only area where prices are going up. It's, you know, it's everything. It's the price of a weekly shop, probably now the price of your mortgage if you have one, even rent prices are going up. So it's not just your energy bills going up. It's in the context of many, many other expenses also going up. So yeah, it's absolutely huge.
I mean, Lee, we're hearing a lot about heating and eating. Do you think it's really going to come down to that?
I think it will, Georgie. I mean, you know, I think we were talking about this last week, and I was getting a bit emotional about it, because you think about, you know, a lot of us can absorb these rises, right? And it's a typical £700 rise if you're on a default tariff, and a lot of people are on default tariffs now because their fixed rate has ended or they've been shunted onto another supplier. And I think it's upsetting to think about some people that can't stomach these rises. They can't just absorb, you know, what is potentially an extra £50 a month or £70 a month on top of other inflationary pressure, including the supermarket shopping. There's been this big discussion about, you know, inflation on the lowest priced items at supermarket shops, you know, your pastas and all that kind of stuff. There's been a lot of talk around that, and it's quite upsetting to think about people having to make a choice between going without essential things to be able to afford to heat their home. I mean, it's a ghastly situation. It affects elderly people, it affects people on low incomes, it affects families. And the thought of that is quite galling. I think it's a really horrible thought to think that, you know, we've got a cold snap coming this weekend. Are people going to not turn their heating on? Are they going to put on extra layers in their home? You know, they're the sort of choices that people might have to make. And there was a Servation poll out this week, which I think it polled more than 2,000 people. And one third of the respondents said that they would potentially skip a meal if their energy bill went up 50%. And well, energy bills typically are going to go up 54%. And I should also point out here that the tariff, the default tariff for prepayment meters is going up, is going to be even higher. And that affects people mainly on low income households that have fallen behind on bills in the past.
Slipped into debt. So it's those.
Yeah, they've already slipped into debt in the past when energy prices weren't as high as they're going to be. So, you know, that's the problem. This is going to come and bite in April. We've been warning about this for a number of months, I feel, Georgie, that we kind of knew that this price cap was going to be quite large. I thought it was going to be close to £2,000, and it has been. But the pain doesn't just stop there, because Ofgem is now talking about, the cap gets set every 6 months. They're now talking about making it every 3 months.
What would that make, Lee?
Well, it could potentially mean that you're not then protected for the next 6 months, even at these higher prices, because the forecast from Cornwall Insight is that for October, which is when the next price cap is scheduled to sort of bite, It could be more like £2,300. Mm. So we have the end of this is not in sight. It's been driven largely, as we've discussed before, about from wholesale prices. You know, they've gone up astronomically. And then things like network costs have also gone up. The supply of last resort fee that's gone on there has helped bumped it up as well.
So many have failed
because of the short-term outlook that a lot of these energy suppliers had while offering, you know, rock-bottom prices. We've had years of, you know, low energy prices in the context of things now. And it's a worry. And again, we sound like a broken record, but this April, it looks like it's going to be a horrific April, really, when you factor everything in, the energy bill rises, other utility bills like your broadband, your mobile, all those kind of things, the national insurance hike. And actually, I think the real takeaway from this, the real sort of, and I'm sure I've read this stat before, but the Bank of England are saying that this is going to be the first real fall in sort of living standards for 30 years. You know, we're going to have 2% less money in the next 12 months. And I remember that figure being bandied around a couple of months ago. So I don't think that's anything new, but it's looking likely that 2022 is going to be a pretty horrible year for people's finances. And as I always say, there's no one size fits all. Some people will be affected way more than this than others. Others can absorb it. Others can go, I've got an emergency savings pot. You know, this is what it was there for, to any kind of shock like this. But there are a lot of people that just, you know, live, you know, from paycheck to paycheck you know. Yeah. So it's worrying.
Because I guess our job is largely to try and tell people what they can do. And of course, like you said, there are people where, you know, you can check your bills and cut back. But there are lots of people that absolutely will not be able to do that. They don't have any financial resilience anyway.
Yeah, I remember reading a report last year. I'm sure it was at the start of last year. I think it might be from the FCA, saying that it was a couple of something like one in five households couldn't stomach a £50 a month extra outgoing. So if bills went up by £50 a month, one in five households would struggle with that. Mm. Well, fast forward to February 2022, about a year after that report. Well, £50 a month, it feels like it's a low amount compared to what bills might go up to. The one little saving grace on this is come April, you know, we will be relying less on heating. You know, we largely bearing a real cold snap, you know, probably won't rely on our heating as much. It's not as much as an issue between sort of April and September, but it's later in the year when it gets to October, and then we go through another winter of potentially even higher bills, that this is really, really going to come home to roost, I think.
Well, let's talk about some of the government help schemes. So I suppose, Lee, on that thinking about the higher energy bills are going to come in October, which is why the government's help, the rebate, I suppose we call it, on our energy bills, that £200 comes in October. It's not very helpful for those people whose bills will go up, as in 22 million people or whoever, from April. But let's take a look at it, Helen. So the government, the Chancellor, said £350 for lots of households. Not all households, lots of households. It's that £200 loan, and I'll get you to explain what that is for your energy bills, and council tax. A bit of a weird one, because you sort of think, nothing to do with energy. However, it's a way in which people can get some money back. So £150 off our council tax. But forgive me for doing terrible back of the fag packet maths here. But if the average council tax is about £1,500 and council tax is going up, can go up by 5% and is likely to go up about that, that wipes out half of that £150 council tax help. And I pay more than £1,500. I'm sure many other people do as well. And that's only 4 out of 5 households, by the way. There is a discretionary fund for local councils to help those people who fall through the net. But the when you look into the detail there, Helen, it doesn't look that great, does it?
No, it doesn't. It's very much a case of giving with one hand and taking away with the other. So the way this works is people will get a £200 discount on their electricity bills from October. You say discount, but it's essentially a loan because it does need to be, it needs to be paid back, basically. So this is from October. Again, it doesn't really help anyone this winter, but it will apply from next winter. They will need to pay it back in £40 instalments over the next 5 years, starting in 2023. That's when they're expecting wholesale gas prices to fall, so people's bills might start to go down. The council tax rebate, that's £150, and it's people living in properties which are bands A to D, lower value, smaller properties. That comes in from April. You know, it's some help, but then, yeah, so you look at the other bills going up around the same time. National insurance is going up from April. So that means that people on £30,000 a year, that's an extra £255 a year in tax. It swings around about, you know, there's this discount, but then other taxes are going up. It's really not going to make much of a difference.
The winter home discount as well, to the government planning to expand that from 1 million people to 3 million so they can get £140 off their bill between, I think it's October and March. But that comes from our bills, does it not? So the current modelling of that, if they do want to increase the number of people on that, you're going to have to increase everybody else's bills even more.
It just feels like shuffling the deck chairs, Georgie, a little bit, some of these measures, if I'm being quite honest with you. And there was a little funny thing going around on Twitter yesterday calling the Chancellor the Klarna Chancellor, which I quite liked, about paying back, you know, in instalments. But it does feel like shuffling the deck chairs. Now, you know, their help has needed to be put out there. You know, there was all sorts of things that were being talked about on our energy bills, for example, you know, removing VAT. But they've gone down this route. It remains to be seen how helpful this is going to be. And this has got a huge caveat in it, in the fact that they're predicting wholesale prices to fall in 2023, but there's a long way to go until 2023 and fully knowing what is actually going to happen. And then in terms of council tax, I mean, you look at your council tax breakdown. I always look at it. I look at it every year when I get it through the post and I think, God, it's gone up again, like this percent. You start looking and you break it all down and you think, it's just like, it just feels like a never ending cycle of council tax increases. And then, but as you say, it's going up and then you're going to get a discount if you're A to D. Does it really help people that really need it? You know, how is this sort of tested out? You know, potentially I'm in an A to D property. You know, I'm going to, do I need it? I don't really need it. So can I just say I don't want it? You know, there's all sorts of little bits and pieces with this that I kind of, it's been hard to sort of fully understand the logic behind it. I understand the logic of helping the most vulnerable households. So for example, the winter allowances, you just said that 3 million people will be able to benefit from. And I kind of understand that, yes, you can take £200 off of someone's bill and then push on that cost for future years to help absorb it. But A, it feels a bit like kicking the can down the road. B, it feels a bit like shuffling the deck chairs. And C, I'm running out of cliches.
It's
tricky. Look, the one thing I will say is that whoever was in power, it was going to be difficult to come up with a solution to rising wholesale costs like this. And Simon and I were discussing in the office this week. You know, you wonder if this whole drive towards, you know, not having boilers and our reliance on gas and everything, they kind of knew in advance that there potentially could be a big surge in wholesale costs, but potentially it's come sooner than they thought it was going to come. And again, I'll go back to this, you know, a lot of these energy firms should have been stress tested and we should have been looking at what a shock wholesale gas price would do to energy bills. Yeah. And we wouldn't have been so blindsided by it. It's all worries. It's all things that they're saying that wholesale prices drop next year, but there's no guarantee.
No, absolutely. Of course not. So more help may needed to be had. In terms of other things that could be done, Helen, it's sort of off the energy topic, but I was reading your article about broadband and mobile prices going up. And I think it's broadband that's going up by CPI. And mobile that goes up by RPI. I suppose one thing the government could do is stop people using this ridiculous outdated system, which is only used because it's higher So they're charging 4%, as opposed to 5.4%. I just, and a little bit extra, I should point out, 3.9%. So my mobile phone bill was going up 11 point something or other. I mean, that's a sneaky little, I know it's only sort of the odd £5 every month, but we really need that £5 every month.
Yeah, that happens all the time. And it's definitely something that the government would be able to act on, I think. You're right, it's just these little costs that it might just seem like a few pounds. But yeah, changing that method of inflation would make a difference. And, you know, I think the action taken on this kind of has to go a bit deeper than, oh, you know, we'll lend you some money, but, you know, you have to pay it back. It's too short term. And it's, you know, what's going to prevent something like this happening again? You know, it might not be energy prices, it might be something else. But I think the way that price rises are calculated does need to change, especially when, you know, you think like a lot of people's salaries aren't really going up. So it's how are they supposed to cope with these things?
It's a bit of a screwed up system, Lee. I'm going to just say it out there. You know, I am by no means an energy expert, but seriously, the system was a little bit messed up, wasn't it? I mean, we have an artificial price cap involved. We had companies charging hundreds of pounds less for other people to be charged hundreds of pounds more for the same product. And now we've got to a situation where, you know, there are literally people going to be struggling to put food on their table. This is a ridiculous situation. But I do, to a certain extent, feel not sorry for the current government, but I do think this is years in the making.
Yeah, definitely. This is what I'm trying to get at. You know, it's like when things are going well, like, you know, as in like, you know, the price cap was kind of relatively stable. And before we had a price cap, energy prices were relatively stable. It's never really been a huge concern, I'd say, in the last decade. It's just then, you know,
isn't the fact we had a price cap show that the system was pretty screwed anyway, that you had to have an artificial government intervention essentially into
the industry? and this goes back to sort of people's thoughts of, you know, should it be nationalized again? Should a utility like energy be nationalized? Because, you know, there was this story doing the rounds yesterday about, you know, countries in mainland Europe are struggling with rising wholesale prices as well. But I think, for example, in France, they have a different kind of system. And, you know, it's not really being felt by households. You know, we have a kind of system here in which we had a lot of people setting up their own energy companies pretty easily. And then just sort of undercutting the market, gaining customers. And was that the right system? Well, again, I go back to asking questions of Ofgem. I go back to my example of, you know, you can't just set up a new bank. You know, you have to have all sorts of capital. You have to go through all sorts of testing. It can take years to get a banking license. It just feels a little bit like there was a few fly-by-night energy firms that are kind of just flying by the seat of their pants, gone for it, launched an energy company. As soon as the going's got bad, like it has now, all of this disappeared and left people in the lurch, left people going over to, shunted over to back to big companies. And then they've gone on to the default tariff and how the default tariff is going to go even higher. And just to rewind a little bit about the RPI CPI thing.
Yeah.
You know, this is one of my bugbears. It's one of the things that really winds me up, the RPI CPI thing. And it's almost like things get picked and chosen what can be linked to RPI and what can be linked to CPI. So, for example, the CPI is always lower, right? And that's linked to state pension. Not that it was this time around, but, yeah, you know, other sort of benefits, universal credit, all that kind of thing. Then you look at what's linked to RPI and, you know, is your mobile bills and all that sort of thing. Train fares, it annoys me so much that train fares are linked to RPI. And then interest on student loans, you know, again, RPI. Yeah, final salary pension payments are linked to RPI, but that is just about it. That's about the one benefit that some people get from it. There has been House of Lords discussions about scrapping this measure of inflation, but it just never seems to come to fruition. So, you know, the RPI CPI thing winds me right up.
What bugs me about that article as well, Lee, the one about the mobile and broadband, is that they can allow, and I don't know why Ofcom have allowed this, to change the price midway through your contract. Now, their argument, the mobile and broadband, is, well, we need to invest in infrastructure. All right, that's fine. Do it at the start of my contract. Let me pay you what I expect to pay. And then don't change it arbitrarily. It's supposed to be clearly set out. I've read some of the terms and conditions of these, and it's not, we may raise prices. By how much? I mean, like, that's not clear. Exactly.
And actually, from the RPI, CPI argument into terms and conditions argument, I think the terms and conditions should just be one page. You know, the real key stuff. There's just too much pages and pages and pages of things for people to not bother reading and just tick it, and then a bill rise happens, and then it's all in your T's and C's. But the key bits of the T's and C's should just be bullet pointed, you know, so you actually know what on earth is going to happen to your contract. And let's face it, George, as well, something like a mobile contract, a lot of us have been pushed onto 36-month contract now. If you want to get the latest, most expensive phone, personally, I would never have a 36-month contract. But that is a lot of what the default contracts are out there now. And you might be soaking up three increases during that time linked to RPI. And all these things really then come to light even more in a time like this, when we have a cost of living crisis like this, things that come into sharper focus. Instead of us just sort of like rolling over and accepting it, you start questioning it, going, well, hold on a minute, like, where do we start cutting back on people's bills? And things like that are open for discussion in my mind.
Yeah, indeed. We've gone a bit off topic there, talking about mobiles and stuff. But I do think it's quite important. And you're right.
It is important. It's almost like a go-to utility for people now. Most people have a phone contract. Most people have a broadband contract. You know, I just club it in with essentials like water and energy.
Yeah, all I can hope is, with contracts at 36 months, does that mean phones will now last 36 months? Because wasn't that creepy little thing where after 2 years, they just suddenly stop working as well as they did? Anyway, that's what I'm hoping. No, I buy my phone outright, and then I have a little SIM-only contract. I go for 12 months. I should tell you just very quickly, having read your article, I looked, I was out of my SIM contract, so I was paying £15.21 a month. It's not a lot, but you know. I looked on my app, and the best offers they were giving me were for data I definitely wouldn't use. So I thought, no, I'm going to go on a price comparison website. I'm going to see what's the best offer. It's way better than what I'm on at the moment, and it's £10, and it's 12 months. So I called them up and said, I want this deal. And she went, all right, then. That was it. So I saved myself £5.21 a month. I did ask for them not to put on the RPI when it comes April, because it just seems a bit silly. I've got myself a £10 deal, but come April, it's not going to be £10 anymore. It's going to be £10 plus 11.9%. But she said no to that.
Computer said no to that one, Georgie.
I got to check with the manager. I was under pressure. I was about to go on radio to talk about it, actually. So I was like, I'm going to have to go. But I think she was extra nice to me, because I did say I'm about to talk about this phone call on the radio. That's always a good way. You can try that as well at home. You know, if you do.
In all seriousness, Georgie, that is the correct thing to do. You end your contract.
I've read your articles.
you get to the end of your contract, and then you just go on to a SIM only deal. I've had the same phone now for years. I've been out of contract, paid it off over my mobile contract, been on a £10 a month SIM only deal for the last couple of years, and phone's still going strong. Still got 10,000 photographs on there that I never ever end up putting anywhere.
Exactly.
Which is probably the thing that puts me most off getting a new phone, because I just can't be bothered to take all the photos off.
Can also recommend Airtime Rewards as well. That saved me £114 on my phone bill off since November. But anyway, Helen, apologies. We're going to now talk about the Bank of England, because the rise in energy price cap could push inflation even higher than expected. Now the Bank of England reckons it could peak at 7.25% in April. That is presumably why, despite the deepening cost of living crisis, an hour after we got the energy decision, I think it was technically about 45 minutes, but the hour thing just works. They announced rates would rise again from 0.25% to 0.5%. That is the first back-to-back rise since 2004, I think. Helen, good decision?
I mean, technically, if you want to, you know, the intention was is to kind of claw back inflation, which is rising obviously quite rapidly. But I mean, it's going to be pretty catastrophic for a lot of people, you know, especially if you're looking at things like mortgage rates are going to go up, and as usual, savings rates probably aren't going to go up. So it's bad news for most people.
I'm going to dig into those two things a little bit more detail. But before that, Lee, I just want to talk, because you mentioned there earlier inflation. I mean, it's hard not to. What will this really do? How much of a threat is inflation?
Oh, it's a huge threat, Georgie. And actually, one of the first things when that price cap was announced yesterday, one of my first questions was, well, what's the forecast now for inflation? Because it has really helped push inflation measure up, right? So as you say, a little while afterwards, found out now they're saying it's going to go beyond 7%. And I feel like it's gone from, they're saying it might be 4%, then 5%, then 6%. Now it's going to be on 7% before it starts to taper off. The idea is having a base rate rises. Basically, if inflation is growing fast, like it is at the moment, you raise interest rates and it discourages borrowing, encourages saving, which tends to sort of slow the economy down. And the idea then is that it helps decrease inflation. But we're in a really kind of funny time at the moment. It's really hard to keep the lid on inflation. And there's been a lot of pressure being put on the policymakers to start raising rates. And it can be quite painful for quite a lot of people. And the thing is, with inflation really now, you think the long-term target's 2% and then you're sort of overshooting that target potentially by 5%. It could even be potentially more than that later on this year. There is talk of potentially another 3, maybe even 4 interest rate rises before the end of the year. And I think there's a lot of talk of it being around about 1.5% to try and rein back this inflation that's sort of, you know, really hitting us. But then
it work.
Well, you know, without trying it, it's going to be really hard to know, isn't it? Because as I say, this feels like it's hitting us really fast. This feels like it's a real fast moving freight train of inflation. All of a sudden, there's a lot of pressures coming from all sorts of angles. And it almost feels like a perfect storm of rising bills, rising fuel costs, rising weekly shop, rising costs of absolutely everything. And it becomes difficult to try and manage that. And it also becomes difficult to try and manage that without triggering some stagflation. And that's the next thing that, you know, this is going to be the next term you're going to hear more of in the next few weeks is stagflation. Essentially, you know, it's a period of slow economic growth with high levels of inflation. And when they happen together, it can have quite a devastating impact on our finances. So there's a lot of balancing to be done. The vote on Thursday was 5-4 between the policymakers. But I actually think I've read, forgive me if this is incorrect, but actually they wanted to increase it to 0.75%. And that's actually why it looked closer on paper than what it was. So they actually wanted to put it up 0.5% rather than 0.25%. I think the sensible course of action is probably to nudge it slightly higher rather than doing 0.5%, you know, sort of slowly catchy monkey. I've actually realized I've really, really, really done a cliche podcast, haven't I, this week? It's so many cliches to throw around. But whether it works, Georgie, it's really hard to know. I think if wholesale energy costs start to drop next year, you know, then you start to think, well, that will start help easing inflation. We need things like price of oil to drop a little bit. So we're still at petrol prices that basically at record highs. Yeah. I mean, that feels like a lifetime ago now, but it was just a few months ago that people were queuing around the block and fuel courts were going empty. And it's been a bonkers few months, hasn't it, Georgie? I feel like this podcast has, but I especially say, I think the last 6 months in terms of sort of personal finances and our money, it's just been, we always knew at the start of the pandemic, I always said, how are we going to pay for this? What's down the road? What's going to happen? And it all feels like it's kind of coming home to roost now. And yeah, what do you do about this inflation problem? It's really hard. And then we talk about something like savings rates. I mean, the gap between what you're probably earning in your savings account to what inflation might be is huge. I mean, there's eroding your cash, and then there's properly eroding your cash. What's the solution, Georgie? Well, you know, that's what they're trying to do. They're raising rates. And, you know, I don't like predicting. And you know that I said that last time. I don't really want to do predicting, but I'd be very, very surprised if there's not a few more base rate rises this year.
I like how you've already anticipated the question you know I was going to ask you. Without sounding like Her Majesty, Helen, how could one? She sounds very well. Why did no one see this coming? Really, I mean, we were told a lot with inflation that it would be transitory, and you know, I remember the conversations around the summer and stuff. Oh, it's fine. Had I don't know, the penny dropped a little bit earlier that, you know, demand might go up as economies come out of what is a horrendous global pandemic lockdown. Had actions been taken earlier, could some of this been avoided? Or do you think not?
It's so difficult to tell, isn't it? Because it's been such a mad couple of years. I think, you know, for the first year or so of the pandemic, people were, you know, the thing you heard people say all the time was, oh, this is unprecedented times. It's such a unique situation. And I think genuinely people had no idea how we were going to come out of all of this. People just didn't know. Any predictions were almost kind of not worth making. I mean, look at things like the housing market.
Do. And that's what they do. Do you know what I mean? They always have predictions. Most of them are wrong, to be fair, but... predicting that.
It's true, but I mean, I think in a lot of ways COVID has just confounded expectations. I mean, look at the start of the pandemic, people were saying, you know, the housing market's going to absolutely crash, and then it's gone absolutely gangbusters for like 2 years. So it's genuinely, I think just no one really knew what was going to happen.
All right, I'm going to talk about what you talked about, house prices and all that, mortgages. What will a rate rise mean? It is still, I mean, there's people who remember, you know, rates being very high will think 0.5%, that's nothing, you kids. But what will it mean in terms of bills, trackers, all those sorts of things?
Yeah, so with the rate rise, people who are going to be impacted immediately is anyone on a tracker mortgage. So from their next bill, that's going to go up by 0.25% in line with the base rate. People on standard variable rates, they probably are going to see their rate go up. So it's technically up to lenders whether they choose to put their standard variable rate up. But already, since the announcement yesterday, two banks, Nationwide and Santander, have already said they're going to increase their SVR by 0.25% from the 1st of March. I imagine probably most of the big banks will follow. Fixed mortgage rates, it's a bit of a different story. So obviously, if you're locked into a fix, you're protected until that fix ends. But where it matters more is if you're coming to the end of a fix, or if you're sitting on a standard variable rate looking to fix. So there's some stats out yesterday from Trussell, who are an online mortgage broker, and they basically calculated that someone fixing their mortgage before the last base rate rise, so before the 16th of December, would be paying about £650 less annually on that mortgage than someone fixing a new mortgage on the same terms today. So that's, you know, that's a huge amount, and that's based on basically the cheapest mortgage rate around. So they looked at someone with a £225,000 mortgage fixing at 1.74%, which will now be the cheapest rate given the, if rates kind of went up by the 0.25%. So 6.25%, that's a lot. So I think the advice is to, you know, if you're in a position to fix a new mortgage now, absolutely do it, because rates are only going one way. I mean, rates are still very low, as you said, historically. So yeah, you can fix at about 1.5% for most people with bigger deposits. And you know, that's still good for now. But I think the advice is, if you're in a position to remortgage, lock in now for possibly for 5 years if you can, just to kind of ride out these rate rises.
But the good news, Lee, though, is obviously borrowing gets more expensive, but saving rates are going to go up, aren't they? Really high.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that one, Georgie, if I'm being honest. Look, you would have thought that there will be some movement with this, more so than from the last base rate rise.
We didn't see a lot after the one in December, did we?
We didn't. And big banks continue to pay 0.01% to savers. But there is another little bit of news that might help savers, and that is basically the winding down of our old friend quantitative easing, which basically has given banks the ability to tap into incredibly cheap money. And that's why they haven't really needed to rely on savers. But the Bank of England's call time on it now. The money printing blitz is to be wound down. And that, along with some base rate rises, we might start seeing a little bit of movement. And actually, today, so one day after the base rate rise, We've got our highest paying 1 year fix since March 2020 that's just been launched today by Recognize Bank. You might not recognize them, but they're a new bank on the block. They have FSCS protection and they're offering 1.6%. Is that going to set your pulse higher? Well, you know, it's 0.2 percentage points more than the next Best Buy 1 year fix and only 0.02 percentage points behind the best 2 year fix. So little movements like that then make other challengers have to react. That Recognized Bank savings account probably won't stick around for long, A, because it sticks out like a sore thumb where it's such a Best Buy and it probably doesn't have the biggest ability to suck in money. Wouldn't be surprised if that goes under a week. And then we've also had a new Best Buy Easy Access launch today. Aldermore have come back with its 0.75% rate. Now, I was saying earlier about the gap between that and inflation. That's the best you can get on your money at the moment, but it's a damn sight better than 0.01% that is languishing around. And we had some stats out for 2021. Money was pulled out of fixed rates and pulled out of ISAs. So there was less money in fixed rate and ISA accounts last year. It dropped. But easy access wise, £99 billion more went into easy access accounts. Easy access accounts pay an absolute pittance, but it shows that people want quick access to their money. They weren't sure what they were going to do with it. But a lot of that probably pay. I think there was a stat in there saying that something like 70-odd percent of that cash is earning under 0.1%. I mean, that is mind-blowing. That's mind-blowing, you know, and I'm not going to repeat the same mantra. If you wanted to move your money by now, you would have done it. But, you know, will we start seeing a bit more competition? Well, a couple of the experts are saying the link between base rate rises and savings rate rises has long sort of disappeared, to be quite frank. But there are some signs, you know, including those movements today, that challengers and potentially building societies might start nudging rates a bit higher. At least that's a little bit of good news, kind of. Little tiniest little nugget of good news.
We shall see. Helen, you spoke about fixing for 5 years. Let's go here now. Fixing for a decade. Why we're mentioning is because Halifax and Lloyds launched a series of 10-year fixed rate mortgages with Best Buy rates. But should you? 1.66%. Sounds rather tempting.
Yeah, it's 1.66% for Lloyds for remortgage customers with 40% deposits and 1.68% from Halifax for home movers, again, with 40% deposits. They're cracking rates. It's not much more than you might expect to get on a two-year fix. So they're really good rates. The issue is with fixing for 10 years, it's all about your circumstances, your situation. So these mortgages all come with early repayment charges, which are going to be levied if you try and leave the deal early. So they tend to taper down. With these ones, I think it's more of the mortgage balance if you leave within the first 5 years, and then it kind of tapers down as the years go down. I think it's 6% if you leave within the first 5 years, which can be a lot of money. So if you're going to take a 10-year fix, you need to be pretty sure that you're not going to want to move within those 10 years. That's the key. That might mean, you know, you're not going to look to downsize. You're not going to, you know, potentially get divorced. Any of these things that, you know, you don't. But these things happen, though. These things that you don't expect that crop up. And, you know, it can happen. And it's a lot of money. So you have to be really, really sure that you are going to be in the same place in your life 10 years from now as you are today.
Do you know what? The number of times we've spoken about 10-year fixes with Lee and Simon, I don't think either of them, which shows wonderfully how divorce is not in their mind. But I'd never thought about divorce. God, yeah. Helen, sensible woman. Lee, whenever we do talk about this, you always talk about I always remember you talking about 2-year fixes going within a blink of an eye. Snap your fingers and it's gone. It's so quick. 10 years though,
it is surprising how the years melt away, Georgie. You know, you do a 2-year fix and before you know it, you're remortgaging. You don't think you will be, but it creeps up on you so quickly. And that's why last time I just thought last April rates were just so low for the LTV it had in the property. Now it was just sort of like it was criminal not to fix under 1% for 5 years. I mean, that is just, I couldn't get my head around it. And I was thinking, there's no way this can ever go any lower. We've got no plans to move at the moment. And already a year of that has almost gone. I'm like, it felt like I did it yesterday. And that is the thing. It's surprising how quickly these things sort of go. But 10 years is a massive, massive, massive commitment. That is a massive commitment. There's not many sort of first-time buyers, for example, that would probably think that they're not going to move within 10 years. I mean, I'm first-time buyer. You know, this is my first property that I own, and I'm here 6 years already. So it is, and by the end of the five-year term, it would have been 10 years. But I think the big point about this story is that it's like major lenders now are going in for these decade-long fixes. And in other countries, actually, long-term fixes like this are pretty commonplace. You know, people don't really shuffle around and chop and change properties as much. But there's a lesson a little bit in that. You know, just like it is such an incredibly low rate, but you've got to really decide if it's for you. And actually, I did something very similar with my energy bills. I'm feeling very smug and you know, kind of fortunate about that. I saw this deal about this time last year, and the rate on the energy was so low with Shell Energy. Now, I should point out here, I was shunted onto Shell Energy after it took over First Utility, so I'm not with Shell by any of my own choosing. But it was offering a 27-month fix for an incredibly low amount. And not only that, wow, it gave me a free Amazon, not just a little Amazon Nest, the Google Nest. I got one of the big Basie Google Nest thrown in with that. They're about £200 RRP.
Lucky boy, Lee. Wow.
You know, it's just ridiculous. And I'm lucky because I don't think Shell were going to go bust anytime soon, he says with kind of crossed fingers. But there is what I'm trying to say, not trying to be smug with this at all, because I almost feel a bit embarrassed that I'm on that tariff and that I'm going to kind of hopefully sidestep a lot of this. But I felt like in a lot of financial products, stuff was just so cheap, like so low. And then when I see something like that, I'm thinking, well, 27 months feels like ages. But really, if I fix for a year and then, you know, I might say 50 quid because the price has come down a bit, my brain just said, that's a ridiculously low amount of money. Just go for a 27-month fix. You don't have to think about it.
No, I don't think there's nothing wrong with sort of saying, actually, you know, I'm not going to be hit really badly by this. You have to feel angry at a system when there are people that really cannot afford some of these, and it's for the same sodding product.
Yeah, you don't have a better quality of electricity or gas. You know, you don't change provider and all of a sudden, like, you know, your gas is coming faster, or it's like, you know, a better, you know, you might have better customer service. That's the thing we always say. But, you know, on the face of it, it's just the same product, as you say, just with a different badge on it. And that's the thing. It's crazy. It is, and I struggle to get my head around it all. You know, I feel like that gif of that man with all of the out of the hangover with all of the numbers going around, swirling around his head, trying to figure out how on earth we've got to this situation and what on earth how we unravel it all. But hey, this podcast could go on for half a day and we'd still be talking about it. So.
That's the energy. And I'm going to take it off now. We're going to go talk about something completely different because it's cream on the case. Today, we're going to be discussing the case of someone with a five-year fixed rate mortgage with NatWest on their home in London. Now, your reader wanted to renovate and needed to remortgage in order to fund this. I'm going to let you take up the story, Helen, because it's a really long question and I'm sure you can do it much better than me. What's this about?
Sure. So essentially one of those cases of just always check what you're being charged for things, because even the biggest banks can make mistakes and it can leave you quite out of pocket. So this guy, as you say, he was wanted to renovate his home and he was remortgaging in order to fund that. He kind of sensibly, he'd done the sums and he worked out that if he made a couple of 10% overpayments, he could then remortgage to a lower rate, which would save him money in the long term. So most mortgages will have a limit on how much you get. Most fixed mortgages, I should say, will have a limit on how much you can overpay every year. On his mortgage, this was 10%. 10% of every year of the mortgage. So the first 10% payment he made in mid-December last year. He thought his mortgage end date was 31st of December. So he then made another payment in early January, counting, he thought, as two separate years. But then he got hit by this nearly £4,000 charge from NatWest. They said he'd actually made both the payments in the second year of his mortgage, and he needed to have made the first one by the 30th of November in order for it to count as year one. So he completely didn't understand this. He went back to check his documents when he took it out, and it quite clearly said the first year of your mortgage ends on 31st December. So I didn't get it. I think what's happened here is there's a bit of confusion around mortgage start and end dates. And people are rightly confused because there's two ways that it can work. So when you take out a mortgage fix, it might say this mortgage is fixed for 24 months from the day you start it. So that would be exactly the same day you started it. 24 months later, it finishes. There's another way that some lenders do it, which is that instead of fixing for a certain amount of months, it will say this is fixed until this date, which might not be the exact date that you took out the mortgage. So it can, it kind of vary by a few days, a few weeks. And that's essentially what had happened here. He'd taken out a two-year mortgage, but because of the dates, it was essentially the first year of his mortgage was about a year and sort of 3 or 4 weeks. So long short of it, I called NatWest. They didn't exactly admit their mistake, but within a few days, he did have the £4,000 back in his account. So
was their mistake?
Yeah. It's... The annoying thing about this was he actually called them to check before he made the payments, and someone in their customer service said, it's fine, you can pay it by the 31st. And, you know, it's just one of those silly mistakes, but it's cost him a lot of money. So always check, always query things, you know. And it's the kind of thing, you know, perhaps someone could have missed that. You know, he's got quite a big mortgage. He's got a lot of money kind of going in and out at the minute with the sort of refinancing and the renovations. But no, check things, keep your documents, check your details. Give me an email if someone's done something wrong. I'll try and sort it out.
Well done to you, Lee.
It's just one of this column exists because of things like this. It's sort of like we always want to give like companies the chance to do the right thing or rectify mistakes or, you know, just get on with it. And people really contact us at the end of their tether where it's like, you know, this has happened whenever ago and I'm still awaiting this money or for this to be sorted out. And to be honest, it's just not on. We just want companies to act quicker, hold up their hands when mistakes are made. Of course, there's always going to be human error. No one's perfect. No company's perfect. And we're not saying that they should be, but they should be able to rectify mistakes pretty quickly without our involvement. But that's why we're here. That's why we have this weekly, Helen's weekly column. And if you do want to get in touch with her, helen.crane@thisismoney.co.uk.
Marvellous. And you can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you have any comments or questions to the team or anything you'd like them to look into, Lee?
editor@thisismoney.co.uk. You can get us on Twitter @thisismoney. And also you can comment in the podcast story where this podcast will live and let us know your views.
And if you like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes? It helps people find us.